The Effectiveness of Symbols is a description and commentary written by Claude Lévi-Strauss in 1949 of the successful treatment by a Kuna shaman of a woman undergoing a difficult childbirth. According to local belief, Mu, the spirit presiding over the fetus, has become renegade and seized an element of the patient's soul. Okay, that's a very kind of simplified version. The shaman recites a long incantation in front of the patient, describing a mythical journey into Mu's way, where Mu is found and apprehended. And for Lévi-Strauss, the exceptional interest of the shaman's narrative lies in, quote, the discovery that Mu's way and the abode of Mu are not, to the native mind, simply a mythical itinerary and dwelling place. They represent, literally, the vagina and uterus of the pregnant woman, which are explored by the shaman and his assistants, and in whose depths they wage their victorious combat. So through his narrative, the shaman grafts a mythical geography onto the woman's body, which becomes this kind of landscape of mountains and valleys and paths and so on. On their way across the terrain, the shaman and his assistants do battle with various malignant spirits, each of which is described in detail and made to correspond to a specific pain. The shaman and his assistants enter Mu's way in single file. They confront and subdue Mu, obliging her to release the captured spirits before marching out four abreast, by which time the woman is sufficiently dilated and the birth is a success. So that's the basic outline of the narrative which Lévi-Strauss is commenting on. And I just want to bring out a couple of, well, 4 points related to this. First point, the treatment is a psychological one. The shaman does not touch the body of the sick woman or administer medicine, but its success can't be reduced to something like placebo. Placebo is a word that kind of gets bandied about by certain researchers to account for therapeutic effects that arise without any noticeable intervention having occurred physiologically. And what that fails to take into account is one of the basic assumptions of psychoanalysis, which is that language itself has incredibly strong effects on the body. So through his mythic incantation, the shaman performs what Lévi-Strauss calls a psychological manipulation of the sick organ. Second point, the treatment is a talking cure. It takes place entirely in the register of the signifier. As Lévi-Strauss would put it, the following year, Lévi-Strauss wrote in his introduction to Marcel Mauss, symbols are more real than what they symbolize. The signifier precedes and determines the signified. Okay, so that's Lévi-Strauss, not Lacan. The shaman's incantation actually has a very interesting link to psychoanalysis. For Lévi-Strauss, the effectiveness of the cure lies in the fact that it integrates the woman's labor pains into a symbolic framework. Quote, the pains of the sick woman assume cosmic proportions. They're organized into a uterine world, peopled with fantastic monsters and dangerous animals, making chaotic and distressing pains and experiences thinkable. And this is what Lévi-Strauss points out in Freud's pre-analytic work. He describes as an abreaction, okay, the expression of something that was previously inexpressible. And in this sense, shamanism, shamanistic treatments, and psychoanalytic cures can be seen to run parallel. They both allow the patient to express previously inexpressible experiences. The former by invoking a social myth drawn from collective tradition to give form to the patient's suffering, the latter by recovering an individual myth from the patient's associations and memories. Third point, if psychoanalysis can shed light on the mechanism of the shaman's treatments, the shaman can also shed light on psychoanalysis. What Lévi-Strauss has in mind is linked to the finding in structural linguistics that what's crucial in the study of symbolic phenomena is not what such and such an element actually represents or stands for, but the relations between those elements. So rather than taking each element in isolation, structural linguistics demands that we investigate the rules governing how they're arranged and combined within a structure. In particular, this helps us to do away with the notion that many analysts in the 1930s and 40s subscribed to, and Levi-Strauss kind of names Marie Bonaparte, that traumatic situations remembered in analysis corresponds to actual events, and that the cure consists in discovering those events, and that one could seek out even objective confirmation of those events by asking relatives and nursemaids and so on. But for Levi-Strauss, those events are always already mythical. He writes, from the moment they appear, the subject experiences them as living myth. Which for me reminds me of that. There's the comment that Lacan makes about toilet training, where he says it's not simply a kind of event in childhood; it's also a kind of Homeric epic that involves kind of conquests and victories and defeats. So it's always already mythical, and that means that we have to make a distinction between history and the past. This approach invites us to move from a search for the precipitating causes of a symptom in the intrinsic features of a traumatic situation to the question of how those events or memories take up a place within a structure. It's a move away from approaching memory as a transcript of an actual event and towards the approach of memory in terms of how it's articulated within a narrative. So Charles's point is that if we understand the material the patient brings to analysis to be structured like a myth, it follows that the traumatizing power, this is the key quote, I think, quote, the traumatizing power of any situation cannot result from its intrinsic features, but must rather result from the capacity of certain events appearing within an appropriate psychological, historical, and social context to induce emotional crystallization, which is molded by a pre-existing structure. These structures are truly atemporal, so they're synchronic. For the neurotic, all psychic life and all subsequent experiences are organized in terms of an exclusive or predominant structure under the catalytic action of an initial myth. End quote. So very last point, fourth point. This emphasis on structure leads Levi-Strauss to a subtle reformulation of the Freudian unconscious. If the Freudian preconscious is the storehouse of memories and thoughts and ideas, then the unconscious for Levi-Strauss becomes reducible to a function which imposes structural laws, this is a quote, upon inarticulated elements which originate elsewhere and thus transforms them into language. And Levi-Strauss calls this symbolic function. This reformulation of the Freudian kind of unconscious brings psychoanalytic and shamanistic cures into even closer agreement. Whether the myth is recreated by the individual or borrowed from tradition, it derives from its sources only the stock of representations with which it operates. But the structure remains the same, and through it, the symbolic function is fulfilled. So what Levi-Strauss suggests is that in spite of the potentially infinite number of symbols in myths and stories and so on, they can actually be reduced to a relatively finite number of structures. And he hints that such structures may in fact be found to correspond to the different forms of neurosis. And there's one last quote. Since the shaman does not psychoanalyze patients, we may conclude that remembrance of things past, considered by some the key to psychoanalytic therapy, is only one expression of a more fundamental method. So that's a very brief outline of the article. It's probably time to actually open the proceedings. We've got a fantastic lineup of speakers, and what we've asked them all to do is really to reflect on this paper, the effectiveness of symbols, and how it relates to their own work in anthropology and also in their own practice. So that's what we'll be doing today. With that, thank you for coming, and let's get started.